Open with me to Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8. The Gospel of Mark is... Have you read it? The Gospel through the Gospel of Mark? And it's a fast pace, isn't it? Have you noticed that? It's moving. A lot of the times used straightway, immediately. Like there's no break in between the things that are happening. And actually, we'll read the first 9 verses here. And then all of a sudden it's off to the next thing. And Mark has like the shortest depiction of this, but also some very important stuff here. So let's read the first 9 verses. In those days, the multitude being very great and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said to them, I have compassion on the multitude because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their houses, they will faint on the way, for some of them have come from afar. Then his disciples answered him, How can one satisfy these people with bread here in the wilderness? He asked them, How many loaves do you have? And they said, 7. So he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves and gave thanks, broke them, and gave them to his disciples to set before them, and they set them before the multitude. They also had a few small fish, and having blessed them, he said to set them also before them. So they ate and were filled, and they took up 7 large baskets of leftover fragments. Now those who had eaten were about 4,000, and he sent them away. And then there you see in verse 10, immediately they got into the boat. And they went to another place. But just this story of Christ feeding the multitude. And I think in it, there is something that Christ is wanting us to know. In it, we see that there is something he wants the disciples to know. And it's more than his ability to multiply bread. It's more than his ability to multiply the fish. But it's his compassion for people and his love for the people who were there. So let's look at, starting in verse 1. We can see the state of the people. Right? We have those days, the multitude being very great, a great multitude, and they had nothing to eat. This is the condition of the people. And I think that we today can look at the world and we can say there is a multitude of people out there with nothing to eat spiritually. They have no resource to feed their souls. They have no way of knowing what God thinks about them. They have no way of navigating a spiritual life because they are lost. And this would characterize the world, a great multitude with nothing to eat. Have you ever been in that kind of condition? In a group of people with nothing to eat. I mean, here living in the States, that might mean we had to drive an extra mile to the next rest stop, right? And that was like a persecution. That was like a great difficulty for us. We have it pretty good, and we maybe don't understand this kind of hunger or this kind of need. But if we look at the world spiritually, we understand that there is a great hunger in the world. And looking for a place or looking for substance to put into their life to satisfy them. Remember we had the illustration years ago about the rice cake. Does anybody enjoy rice cakes? Not necessarily. There's nothing to them, right? It's okay if you like them, right? You got to put something on them though, peanut butter or something, right? But you are looking for substance, and you are looking to for your mouth to be closed on something substantial and to be fed by it. And when you take a rice cake and it's just like it's 90% air, and like there is no satisfaction in it unless you like rice cakes, right? You have to balance that. No, I'm not going to apologize for not liking rice cakes. I'm drawing the line there. But you know what I mean. The soul, the world also is starving for meaning, starving for purpose, starving for identity. and starving for some place to rest their heart. And they are going through the rice cakes of philosophy, the different ways of thinking, the different ways of working towards something, and they are dissatisfied with it. And there is a discontentment and a dissatisfaction in the world because of the emptiness of the philosophies that people eat. And they are not resting on anything substantial. So in that way, we understand this poverty. In that way, we understand this hunger. And maybe even your testimony is that way, that you were living depending on something that was not satisfying you. And you were identifying yourself as something that never got you to the point where you understood your purpose. And we talked about this, right? Always planning, but never coming to the purpose. The adventurer that's always planning the next adventure, but never enjoying the adventure. It's always planning the next thing that would get you to the next place, but always there's got to be another place. Right? I'll travel to India and I'll study under a guru and I'll find peace. And you come back very centered, right? Your vegan diet, and then all of a sudden you were off. Oh, I need to go to Thailand and I need to study. And I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying that they're looking for some philosophy and never finding it. Christ is seeing this in the world. But what does he do about it? It's interesting. Ultimately, we know he went to the cross and he died. But in this story, what does he do when he sees the emptiness of the world, the hunger of the world? What does he do? He calls his disciples unto himself, right? So first, there's a great multitude with nothing to eat. And second, we see that Jesus calls his disciples. He doesn't call them to anything less than himself. And that is the call to the church. That is the call of missions. That is the call that we listen to. Yes, gathering together as the church, but also being moved and being motivated in bringing the gospel to people. That we are the ones, somehow, for some reason, we are the ones that God has chosen to communicate his love to people. What a funny thing. We could say you could have done a better job. You could have used a more effective means. You could have just put the billboard up there in the clouds. You could have just come to everybody in dreams. You could have just made every heart believe. And he said, but no, that is not enough. Because in that, there is not the expression and the communication and the channel of his love. So he calls his disciples to himself, and that's us. We are his disciples. Isn't that amazing to think? We read the gospel and we think of the disciples, the 12 that followed him, or the hundreds that were with him at the ascension. The ones in John chapter 6, the disciples that are there in different levels and in different ways, they are the disciples and we read their stories. But now, in 2020, right, soon to be 2021, how many people are excited for 2021? Right? Yeah? I don't know. I mean, it could be that it's not better. Just a warning, right? That don't look too far ahead, because right now it could be as good as it gets. Huh? I mean, I don't want to be terrifying here or discouraging, but I'm just saying, I don't know, right? There's no promise that 2021 is going to shape up. I think we've been looking forward to it since March, though, haven't we? Get through it. But anyway, why did I say that? All right? But here we are in the year 2020, and Christ has called his disciples to himself. Christ is understanding the hunger in the world. He is understanding the emptiness in the world. He is understanding the lack of nutrients in the world and the lack of what is needed to actually change a life. There are many programs, there are many institutions, and none of them can effectively change the heart of a man. Many good ones, good things, good rehabs, good missions, good like organizations that teach and educate, great things, great purposes, but lacking the ability to change the heart. This is where the problem is. This is what is needed someone who A, cares for the heart, and B, can do anything about it. So Christ, instead of just going out there and changing every heart, has decided to call His disciples to Himself and share with them something. Share with us something and give us some insight as to what His heart is for these people. It's exciting, actually, to think about this next verse, that He has expressed this to His disciples, and He is expressing this to us right now as His disciples. He says in verse 2, I have compassion on the multitude. I have compassion on the multitude. That's what He wants His disciples to know. Because He could look to the disciples and say, what are we going to give them? And they could say, nothing, because we don't have anything. Just tell them to go away. But He does not tell His disciples to look at the multitude before He tells the disciples that He loves the multitude. Right? That He wants to change the disciples' viewpoints. He wants to change the way the disciples look at the world before He tells them to take a look. Because we could be, as a church or as a group of people, we could be like isolating ourselves in this time. And when the church, through history, has done this at different times, but there is always a remnant, there is always a revival, there is always a missions movement that carries the church to the next generation. So what we don't want to do is turn our look inward to only look at ourselves and our own things. Because Christ is always drawing our look outward. And He is always asking us to consider the world. Consider the mission. Consider the broken. Consider the hungry. Consider the empty. And He calls us to look at them not in pity, not in shame, not in embarrassment, not in pride, not in self-righteousness, but with the way He looks, with compassion. What does that do to us? It stirs us in God's love for us. That Christ is not asking these guys to take what they have in their hands and bring it to the world, but He is first telling them what He thinks about the world. That He has compassion on them. And that He says, because they have now continued with Me these 3 days and have nothing to eat. I have compassion on the world because they don't have what it takes to get what they want. Have you ever seen someone toiling, frustrated, working on something? And you could look at them and know that they don't have the equipment necessary to accomplish the job. Right? And you just look at them. And what is going on in their heart? What is going on in their mind? If only I could change what I have. If only I could make it do this. Right? In carpentry, the new guy always got the joke. Right? Go to the van and get the board stretcher. Right? Oh, yeah, okay. Right? Go get the board stretcher. What's it look like? Yellow handle, black extension cord, right side of the truck. Just please, quick, we need it. Right? You come back a few minutes later, I don't see it. Where is it? Come on. The board stretcher. It's on the right side. Yellow handle, black cord, just get it. We'll wait for you again, right? And there is like this attempt to get to what is not there, right? And is there a thought into it like, wait a second, can you stretch a board, right? And does the world have the time to stop and reflect and say, wait, I can't change my own heart. Like, where does that information come from? But it comes from Christ. Pastor Shabelli told a story once of being outside of a mosque in Western Africa, and there was the guy, they have their simple little mosque, and they have a little stone wall out front with the washing stations, and the guy's there, and they wash their ears, their eyes, their mouth, their feet, the whole thing. And Pastor Shabelli asked one guy, he said, can I ask you a question respectively? He said, yes. He said, how do you wash your heart? Right? Ooh. Right? Ooh. Does the world know the question to ask? And that's, I think, what Christ is communicating to these people. I have compassion on them because they are working so hard to fill a void that they don't know what it is and they don't know how to fill it. I have compassion on them. And there are the disciples, we know them, James and John, the sons of thunder. They can say, well, who cares? What is that to us? But Christ is saying, well, I'll tell you what it is to me. I love them. I have compassion on them. And it should be that the disciples' heart can be changed by the shepherd's heart. That I want my understanding of the world to be changed by Christ's communication of what the world is. Because I have my ideas of it. I have my dislike of it. I have my disinterest in it. I have my cold attitude towards it. And that can only be changed by Christ's attitude towards it. And He knows that I need to hear it. This is what He is doing here to the disciples. He says, there is one thing I want you to know. Beyond what I'm going to do, beyond my ability to multiply the fish, beyond my ability to multiply the bread, I need you to know that I love them. Do you get that? Because they have nothing. And if I send them away hungry to their own houses, they will faint on the way, for some of them have come from afar. The seriousness of it, the weight of it, death is there. Death is in this conversation. As people are wandering away, if Christ were to turn His back on people, then they would go to death on their own. Unable to change the course, unable to cover the void or cover the distance necessary to get to where they want to go. The same way, naturally working your way towards heaven, you will never get there. You have gone too far from heaven to get back on your own. As humanity, I'm not talking about the individual case, but I'm talking because of sin, because of Adam, we have gone too far, and we on our own cannot cover the distance to get back. And this is why Christ loves us. And this is why He is communicating the seriousness of it to His disciples. Not so they would go and do anything about it. Not so that they would, in their own effort, save people from hell. But so that they would consider His thoughts towards people. And in considering Christ's thoughts towards people, they would be changed. Look at the disciples' response. Have you thought this way? Have you considered the enormity of a mission? To say, if you look at a guy like Pastor Carl Silva, who had a heart for India, as a young Indian, comes to America, comes to Bible college, and goes back with a heart for India. Pastor Carl, do you know that there are over 1 billion people in India? The mission field is too big for you. Aren't you overwhelmed by it? Yes, I'm sure at some point he was. But he knew something different. He knew something of this, that Christ had compassion on people. And that He was not sent to India to save people on His own, but He was sent to India with resources that came from Christ. And we know the history that the church grew and grew and grew and grew. Now there are many churches in India reaching up into Nepal and into Bhutan because of His ministry and His work. We had Pastor Rajan here a couple years ago, remember? Pastor Rajan from Nepal. Anyway, wasn't that amazing? I was so blessed to have him with us. And I told my kids, I said, we have a missionary, a Nepalese missionary in our home. I said, pay attention to him. He stared at him. Stared at him for a minute. What is he going to do? But it was beautiful. He showed us a picture and a slideshow of his ministry in Nepal. Amazing, amazing. I want to go. Who wants to go to Nepal? Oh my gosh, let's go. Maybe in 5 years when we all get out of this cloud, we can go. Who knows? Right? But it's in our heart, isn't it? Missions is in our heart. And we support the posts as they are missionaries in Nepal. But Pastor Rajan it came from the ministry of Pastor Carl Silva, who had this understanding. of God's compassion. And Pastor Rajan has a radio outreach that reaches the whole nation of Nepal. 12 million people, I think, is his range of influence there in Nepal. And there are places way up in the Himalayas, and the pastors communicate to each other by shouting across these caverns, and the echo they carry, "Hey, hey, 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 I'm coming on Wednesday, Wednesday, Wednesday." Yeah. "Okay, okay, okay, okay." Right? And then they start walking, and days later they have fellowship together. Right? What the heck is going on? That's amazing. We look at it, we say, "Ooh, it's cold." Right? "Ooh. Facebook. Right? No. But the value of getting together, where does that come from? But it comes from understanding Christ's heart for people. But look at the disciples' response. Okay, here's their response. The disciples answered him, "How can one satisfy these people with bread here in the wilderness?" How could you feed people in the wilderness? There is nothing here. Who could ever do anything like that? And do you think Christ is just sitting there listening to them and saying, "Have you read your history books? Have you listened to the stories? There was a span of 40 years that the whole nation of Israel was in a waste, howling wilderness, it's called in Deuteronomy. And I fed them faithfully, consistently, plenteously. They had enough. Who can feed people in the wilderness?" And we look at, you know, people look at New England, right? And it's actually categorized as the coldest gospel. In response to the gospel, it is the coldest place in the nation, right? As far as believing and openness to the gospel. And I say, I don't know about that. I don't know. I think it's pretty open. I think you should bring your study up here again and let's go. We'll go on evangelism together and you can see how cold it is. It's open. But we could look at New England and we say, just put a fence around it and we'll go down. We'll move away, just carpet bomb it. Well, whatever. It's over. Right? No, no. God is on the move in New England. God is moving, and yes, it is cold. Yes, there are, and I don't mean the weather, I mean the spiritual temperature, although we are also plummeting in temperature. But it is cold, the receptivity is not there, we can make many excuses, it's a desert out there, there is no fruit, we might as well just come together and enjoy what we have. No, no, no. We have a God who is able to break into any wilderness, feed abundantly, change lives, stir hearts to faith, cause a revival to happen in a place where we would say it's dead. Have you considered the nation of Israel? Before Israel was a nation again in 1948, it was a wasteland. There was nothing good coming out of Israel. Now it is the first nation to be fully independent. They have everything. They were able to come up with a water treatment system so that they are water independent. They have the most unbelievable farms and produce and all of these amazing things happening in Israel. Because God is able to bring a blossom and a bloom and fruit in a desert place. He did it for the nation of Israel as they wandered in the desert. He has done it historically for the nation of Israel, and He has done it in our own hearts. And we've seen it. And pray to God, consider it, that is He doing it here now? Is He moving? And is He communicating to us as His disciples and coming, bringing us together and saying, "Hey guys, I have compassion on the multitude. They are empty. They are going to hell on their own devices, and I need you to understand I love them." And we could say, "That's great, Lord, you love them, but what can we do about it? We don't have what is needed to feed these people, to feed these people or to supply or to change their heart or to do anything about it." And He says, "That's exactly it. You do not. And I'm not looking to you to do it, but I'm looking for you to look to Me so that you can do it." Because how easy would it have been for Jesus to look at the multitude and just snap His fingers and have, you know, DoorDash there in a second? Like, He could have supplied anything at any time. There is nothing outside of the reach of possibility for Him. He could have supplied for them immediately. He could have just filled their stomachs. Really. Like, that wouldn't have been too hard. And the guy, the one guy, how many people enjoy the process of eating? Right? Like, I love eating. It's so good. Thanksgiving, I'm a little disappointed that I can't eat like 12 plates on Thanksgiving anymore. Right? And if you're younger and you can, just enjoy it. Someday you have one plate and you're like, what's happening? What happened? I'm full. I thought I was just warming up. But no, it happens. Right? But we loved it. The one guy, if Jesus had done that, there would have been somebody who was upset. You stole my joy. I wanted to eat the food. But anyway, he could have done that. But instead, he decided to do something very different. He looked to the disciples and he says, well, what do you have? What do you have? What can you do in the wilderness, Lord? Well, what do you have? They bring their little 7 loaves and few fishes and they say, this is all I have. He looks up to heaven and he blesses it. Imagine the picture. He holds it up to God and he says, this is the little that they have. This is the little resource they have. This is the little compassion that they have. This is the little fire that they have. This is the little ideas that they have for missions. Lord, will you bless it? I've taken it into my hands. They have known my heart. They have known my vision. And now they've given me their little things. And now it begins to multiply. Like, I can't wait to find out how that looked. What was it? Was there a stockpile? Was there an airdrop? What was it? Or was there just the abundance of Christ? John 1:16 says, of His fullness we have received. Of His fullness we have received. And here the disciples are receiving from the fullness of Christ, and they are taking from Christ's hands what is needed for the multitudes. And He doesn't shortcut them, but He pulls them together, He engages them in His love, and He commissions them, and He fills their hands so that they now have what is needed for the starving multitudes. And they go, and they go, and they go, and they go. 4,000 people are fed from a few loaves and a few fishes. Don't put down what you have. Don't discount what you have, but give it to Christ. Understand His love, and understand that you have the ability to make an impact in somebody's life, not because of who you are, but because of who you're with. That when we go to Christ, He fills our hands with what is needed for the world. Isn't that amazing? But He doesn't fill our hands before He fills our hearts. The first step is that He fills our hearts with His own love. He says, I have compassion on these people. Understand that. And He fills our hearts with something. And then based on that understanding of His love for people, He fills our hands. And then we put our hands to work for God. And we have amazing stories throughout our ministry of these missionaries that have gone. I just said Pastor Carl Silva, he passed away this year of ALS, but full of joy. I think of Pastor Rajan. I don't know if you remember when he was here. He had just recovered. He had gotten hit by a car. And he was still in some pain. And he was still shuffling around a little bit, but he had great joy communicating the work that God was doing. He has 3,000 Bible students. In the mountains in Nepal. It's a correspondence Bible course. And so much so that he is impacting the nation. One guy flew into Pastor Schaller actually flew into the airport in Nepal and he got in a taxi cab and he started to ask him if he knew anything about God and about the grace of God. And he says, yes, in the country there is a radio program that goes out across the whole country and we hear about the grace of God. And he said, it's Pastor Rajan's ministry. It's making an impact. People are hearing the gospel. Why? Because somebody had an idea to use a radio program. Did he come up with it? Did he devise this amazing scheme? No, his heart was filled by the love of Christ, and then he put his hands to the little bit that he had and allowed God to bless it and turn him out and to change a nation. That's what's possible. Pastor Sam Muhima, we know him well, don't we? In Kampala, Uganda, he has a few kids coming with need. And then him looking at the city of Kampala and the kids that had nothing, the orphans, and he opened his doors to them. Amazing. I went there in 2004 And it was just his house with a couple kids. And now he has an orphanage with a school and a farm, and that God is doing a great work there. Not because Pastor Sam had anything in particular, but Pastor Sam was someone who, as a disciple, was called to Christ, and he listened to Christ. He understood Christ's heart for people, and he looked out there, and he saw what he could do. And the stories go on and on. Pastor Chris Armin in Malawi. Huh? Pastor Chris, where is he? He's still there. Right? Pastor Matt Sleva and Lisa are church planting up in the Lake Malawi. There's a guy named Pastor Belias Bolaweo in Zambia. He was an electrician, and he met Pastor Shibeli at the post office in Lusaka, Zambia, and it changed the course of his life. He's pastoring the church there now. Right? I don't know. We could go on and on. But here we are. Here we are in Marlboro. What are we doing? Do you remember in January? It feels like 4 years ago, but it was actually just a few months ago. Right? 8, 9 months, 10, 11, 12. It was just ten or 11 months ago. We had the first service in January. Do you remember? We went through all of the things, all of the ministries that we have in the church, and all of the ministries that had been added in the past year. And I was amazed to see the activity in the church. And even through this time, through COVID, we have not stopped reaching out. Imperfectly, yes. Yes, imperfectly, but with a true heart, where we are looking to Christ and asking that He would move us into this community with the gospel. And He has. So let's be prepared. Let's be challenged by this idea of discipleship. Because in discipleship, we see Christ's heart. And in discipleship, our heart is filled. And in discipleship, our hands are filled. And we go out to an empty world that is starving. Starving for substance. Starving for something to really rest their life on. We have it. We have it. It's Jesus. And He has come to us, and He has called us together, and He has said, "Hey guys, come on. What do you say?" In closing, Jesus is not overwhelmed by the multitude. He is not overwhelmed. We could be overwhelmed by the needs. We could be overwhelmed by the size of the mission fields. We could be easily, right? I'm overwhelmed with my own family. But Christ is not overwhelmed. He is not. And I find my rest, I find my ability, I find my capacity enlarged by being at Jesus' feet, having Him fill my heart and then fill my hands, and then I go out with a great message. Amen? Amen. Lord Jesus, thank you so much for this word. Thank you so much for filling our hands, our hearts, and our hands with your things, Lord. Lead us in your love for people. Lead us in the mission, Lord. Help us. Give us direction. Give us focus. Give us vision for the things that you're doing. In Jesus' name, amen.